Right, would you like to identify yourself, please?
My name is Sam T. Beddingfield, and I've been right down here at this place for a little over 50 years, because I came down here to start launching rockets with people in them.
Good evening. Welcome to the Space Show.
Howdy. I'm glad to be here. I'm glad you're here so that we can tell the rest of the world what's going on.
Now, you, I believe, are called Number 4, NASA Number 4. That intrigues me. Could you tell me a little bit about that, how that came about?
Yes, I came down. I was in the Air Force testing airplanes with a guy named Gus Grissom, who became one of the first 7 astronauts. And I got out of the Air Force about the time he got selected as an astronaut, so he talked me into going to work for NASA. And I went to work for NASA at Langley Field, Virginia, and I was up there, and they had about, went to work about 10 days, and they sent me down here on temporary duty. And when I got down here, NASA had 33 people here, but nobody had a serial number or anything, so finally they made the serial numbers in alphabetical order, and Beddingfield is fairly up the alphabet, so my number is 4. And that's how I got started with NASA down here, serial number 4.
What were you doing before you joined NASA?
Before that, I was in flight test. I'm an aeronautical engineer, is my college training, and I was in flight test at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And I went as an aeronautical engineer, not as a pilot. And they weren't sure what that meant, so they gave me no constraints. In the 3.5 years I was in flight test at Wright-Patterson, I logged time in 27 different kinds of airplanes. And that was where I met Gus Grissom, who became one of the original astronauts. We flew together, so.
What was Gus doing in those days?
Gus was in flight test as a test pilot and primarily was assigned to the fighter plane, so we flew fighters together. He was an excellent pilot.
So you came down here to the, you went to Virginia first?
I went to work for NASA because Gus talked me into it. I didn't know anything about rockets, but he said, nobody else does either, so just go to work. And so that's what I did. And we were at Langley Field, Virginia together. But then they sent me down here on quote, temporary duty. And I got here in October of 1959, and I'm still here.
So you'd have seen the construction of many of the pads here, the evolution of the, first of all, the Mercury program, Gemini, Apollo.
And Shuttle. And Shuttle. Yeah, I worked on 4 programs, Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, and Shuttle. I was the first person at KSC assigned to the Shuttle. I started on that in August of 1969.
So, did you see any of the early Mercury flights before the manned ones?
Yes, I came down here to help start Project Mercury, and I saw them all.
Do you have any special memories about those days?
Well, one, the first American, where we did the Redstone, Mercury Redstone, we finally had a spacecraft on the top and everything, and we put it up to launch. And I don't know exactly what happened, but the Redstone rocket lit up, and it lifted about 2 inches and shut down. And we didn't have the spacecraft wired up that way. The spacecraft was wired up, so when the big engine quits, you get rid of your escape rocket and abort. And I have a series of pictures that will go on and on and on, where it shows the escape rocket being jettisoned and then the parachutes being jettisoned and everything, and all the rockets blowing and everything. And it never did lift off about more than 2 inches.
I think that's that they call that the day they launched the escape tower.
Yes, and that's about what it was. Got some good pictures of that around.
Okay, do you still have those pictures?
I have some of them here, but at home I have them from every 15 seconds.
And eventually they sorted those problems out. And did you see the Mercury Redstone flights then with the Alan Shepard and Gus?
Active duty in Mercury Redstone. And I was part of the, they had a a lot of people that were inside the blockhouse, and we locked the doors of the blockhouse and everything, but they wanted somebody outside, so me and two other guys stayed outside the blockhouse in case something went wrong at the pad that we might be able to fix.
And how far from the rocket were you?
Oh, not too far. The Redstone was such a small rocket compared to like the Saturn V, and the Saturn V, if you got any closer than 3.5 miles, you had to be outside. So, but on that one, probably maybe a couple of thousand feet.
Moving on to the Atlas program, Mercury Atlas. What was your involvement in that?
Well, in that one, I was worried primarily about what the spacecraft had to do, so I had to worry about whatever the spacecraft did on a Redstone rocket or whatever it did on an Atlas rocket. The spacecraft was about basically the same, but we had to do different things because of the way it would react to those rockets. The Redstone rocket, to make that flight, you only went about 5,000 miles an hour. And the Atlas rocket, you had to go 17,300. So you made sure that the escape rocket would work. And that was one of the things that I hooked up before we launched. We'd get the crew ready to go out there, and I'd go to the very tip top of the rocket and hook up the igniters in the escape rocket so we would know they would be lively hooked up.
Did you see the chimpanzee flights, both the Mercury Redstone one and the Mercury Atlas ones?
Sure did. The Mercury Redstone one, that one only flew 15 minutes, but we got some good pictures in there of that. And now he flew 100 miles high and 300 miles downrange, and his flight lasted 15 minutes. But then we flew another one called Enos, and we flew him on the Atlas, and he went all the way up and did two orbits around the Earth. So he flew for about 5 hours.
Did you see the chimpanzees after the flight, Ham and Enos?
Yeah, some of them did. We find it. Now, one of them, Ham, lived for 30-something years after his flight. He's still in the museum somewhere.
And how were they after the flight, Tanya?
Well, the second one, Enos, he didn't feel too good because when they flew him only 2 hours, two revs instead of three revs, so he got landed a little bit early, and the standard crew didn't take care of him. It was some different people. So.
And what did the astronauts think of chimpanzees getting the flights before they did?
Well, they all wanted to go. They said, okay, that's what it takes. We'll let that go first. But they really wanted to fly.
Moving on to the Gemini programs, any special memories there?
Yeah, of course, the first manned Gemini was Gus Grissom, the guy that I had been in the Air Force with. Gus flew the second Mercury and the first Gemini, and was going to fly the first Apollo, and that's the one he got killed in. But the Gemini was a lot of fun. We only flew 10 of those missions, and we flew 12 of them, but the first 10 were manned. Or the last 10, I should say.
And any special memories about the astronauts? Perhaps even were you there when the... I think it's Wally Schirra's Gemini. They started the engine and it shut down straight away.
Yeah. Well, that was the Titan rocket with the Gemini spacecraft on it. And it he was in Gemini 6. That was the 6th one. And they had launched a thing that it was supposed to dock with, and that thing blew up, so they delayed his launch. But in the meantime, they went ahead and launched Gemini 7, and they had it up in orbit. So then they decided they would try Gemini 6 again and let it go up and get with the orbiter that was already up there. And they started it, and it in just a few seconds it quit. So it took us about 2 days to resurrect that thing, and we launched it again, and it finally got up in orbit right by the other one. But you had Gemini 6 and 7 in orbit at the same time.
Did you get to speak to those astronauts about that event? How they kept their nerve?
Oh, yeah. I've had a lot of fun talking to them because Gus and I had been, what we had done together, we were in flight test at Wright-Patterson for about 3 years, so we'd been flying together. So I had a lot of fun talking to him. But the other astronauts, I really enjoyed them too.
Were you involved in the early Saturn flights, the Saturn 1, Saturn 1B?
I worked on the Saturn program until we got the first crew to the moon and back, and then they took me off of this Apollo program and assigned me to the space shuttle. I was the first person at KSC to go to work on the shuttle program. But I worked all the way through Apollo 11, which was the first landing on the moon.
Yes. Those early unmanned flights must have been pretty exciting, given that you knew you were driving towards the moon.
That's right. You had to make sure and find out, make sure everything was going right. See, now, Gus Grissom, my good buddy, he got killed in the first one where we were going to try to have an Apollo flight. It blew up on the ground, and he got killed.
What were you doing that day?
I was out there at in the blockhouse with Gus because he was telling me there was not everything going smoothly. So I went out there, and I had told him, it started in the morning. I said, okay, you wait till after lunch, and if you're through with it, then I can come out and you can show me. I'll come all the way out to the spacecraft, and you can show me what you think is wrong. So he said, okay. Well, about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, they were still messing with the thing, so I was getting hungry. So I got on my car and went down to Cocoa Beach and had something to eat and came back. And just as I got back, that's when the thing exploded and killed him. So that made a long day out of it. I had gone to work about 7 o'clock that morning. That was Friday. I got home Tuesday night at 9:30. So it was a hard day.
Yeah. So what was your involvement immediately after the fire?
Is to investigate how the accident was caused and what we could do to overcome it. Did we need to modify the Gemini spacecraft or several other things like that? So I worked on it for just that for about 6 months. And we sent the spacecraft to be stored at Langley Field, Virginia. And as far as I know, it's still there.
It was a fair while after the Apollo 1 fire. Before the manned mission started again, the first one being Apollo 7 with Wally Schirra.
Mm-hmm.
Any special memories of that?
It's just that Wally really knew what he was doing. I had a good time with him, and that was his third type of mission. He flew Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo. He was the only one we ever had that flew three like that.
Mm-hmm. Going on to Apollo 8, the first mission to the moon. Mm-hmm. That was quite a daring flight, wasn't it?
Very daring. We were trying to see if we could catch up, and at that time, we did not have a lunar module that would work. So we flew that mission without a lunar module, and all they could do is go up and fly around the moon and come back. And we did that just to make sure we could.
What was your feeling at the time, you know, when it was decided that Apollo 8 would go to the moon? After it was only the, fourth Saturn V rocket?
Yeah. I was worried that we understood because we had worked very hard on them, but the trouble is the Saturn V has 7.5 million pounds of thrust when it takes off. But it weighed over 7 million pounds, so it didn't even lift up very quick. It took a while to make things go. The first stage of a Saturn V is 137 feet long and 33 feet in diameter, and it burned all that propellant up in 2 minutes and 44 seconds.
And what was your involvement with the Saturn V?
Well, I was the head of the part of the one trying to see if we could take care of all the stuff we needed prior to launch in the firing room. You know, we had a lot of. I was the mechanical engineer.
So you must have been pretty excited when Apollo 8 got into lunar orbit.
Oh, yes, very much so. Especially it was so close to the moon. See, it went close enough to the moon. We almost hit the moon with it. But we wanted to really prove to the Russians that we could fly something that went to the moon that was manned. They hadn't been able to do it.
Were you able to personally observe the launches, or were you in the blockhouse during some of these launches?
You get into something the size of a Saturn V, the blockhouse had very nice windows. It was 3.5 miles from the pad, but my position was right by the window, so I could look out the window and see it.
So how many of the Apollos did you see launch?
Well, I watched all the way through Apollo 11. That was the first one. And then on Apollo 12, I was already working on the shuttle at that time, but the center director called me up and says, you have to be here for the launch on 12. I said, well, I'm working the shuttle. He says, no, we got something you need to do. And there was one very, very, very famous Hollywood star who had flown 44 missions in World War I, and they were going to let him watch the launch, so they had me go out there and sit with Jimmy and watch the launch. Jimmy Stewart.
Jimmy Stewart. So you ought to seen the lightning strike.
Yeah. I've had a lot of times with that. Lightning is what you can do is better stay out of the way.
But what I mean is you saw the lightning strike Apollo 12?
Yes. Yeah, I was sitting out at the VIP site with him, telling him what was going on. In fact, I spent that whole day with him, and then that night we had dinner together.
What was your reaction when you saw that lightning strike? Did you think it's all over, or...?
I thought, oh, man, I don't know what it's going to do to that thing, you know, because there wasn't many things you could do to it once it got, and they just recycled everything in there. We had enough equipment on board so you could do it. And fortunately, the crew that was doing could do things very quickly and do them exactly right.
I believe they've changed the procedures now so that they don't launch if there's lightning anywhere near.
Yeah, well, that's one thing. Now, the shuttle is entirely different from what the Apollo could get hit by lightning and not mess it up. The shuttle can't do that. The heat shield on the shuttle is made so that it's very, very, very lightweight stuff, and it cannot take a lightning strike.
Yeah, it's also insulating, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Electrically insulating, I mean.
Right. I've got some tiles around here I can show you. So,
So when did you leave the program?
I retired in very late 1985, but I've been going back since then. You know, I was the deputy director of the shuttle program when I retired, so I go back every now and then now. Yeah, I worked on Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, and shuttle. And I
just
retired
before
in late 1985. That was after the third. The 23rd shuttle launch, and I made up my mind on Tuesday and retired on Friday.
So you'd have been around then when Sally Ride, the first female American astronaut,
right.
flew?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was here then. And I had a very nice place for the launch. I was out at the firing room, but they have great big open windows, and my seat was right by the window in the firing room, so I could really see hear what was going on.
Over those years, you must have worked with some extremely talented and wonderful people, and perhaps some characters. Have you got a few stories to tell?
Well, I had some of them that were just unbelievable that you could work with. Like now Gus Grissom, who was one of the first seven astronauts. We had been in the Air Force in flight tests together at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base before he got selected to be an astronaut. And some of the flying that we did together in flight tests was very interesting. I went up with him one day, and we had a two-seated F-100, and he wanted me to go with him. So I got in the back seat. And the seat wouldn't go up and down. It was all the way down. He said, that's all right, so we can just go ahead and fly it. We were supposed to be running a chase flight on a B-47. Well, the B-47 never made it off the ground, so Gus said, well, you just go ahead and fly it, see how you like it. So I was flying the thing and looked around, and down to 700 pounds of fuel. Now, that sounds like a lot, but it ain't much for an F-100 airplane. So I said, hey, Gus, I'm down to 700 pounds of fuel. No answer. He said, hey, Gus. He says, where are we? I said, well, I think I'm south of the base, but I can't see out good enough to know. That seat was all the way down and wouldn't go up. He says, I got it. Hear him click his radio on. Says, Pat Tower, this is Drumhead 5. We're on initial for landing. He said, we don't see you. He says, hold on, you will. We were 35,000 feet high. He rolled that thing over, went right down. We had enough fuel to taxi. He just never knew what was going to go on with some of these people, I'll tell you.
And you, of course, met many of the other astronauts.
Oh, yeah.
And they have stories to tell as well?
Oh, a lot of them do. I had a lot of fun with many, many of them. I worked Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, where I worked very closely with all the astronauts. And then once I was the first person assigned to the shuttle. But we had so many shuttle astronauts, it was almost hard for me to remember all of them. Because, you know, you'd have each launch, you could have 7 astronauts each launch. Yes. And the last one we flown was number 131. So there's been a lot of those.
Well, thanks for joining us on the space show.
I've enjoyed doing a lot of stuff. I hope I haven't had you have any problems or anything.
No, that's been wonderful. Thank you.
Okay.